If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are going to move. We are going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to go as quickly as they want to get there. So I think part of it, yes, Cobb, is new energy from new coach and all the new things that we're hearing him say, especially after, you know, what was that, 6 years of Ryan Silverfield. I mean, those things, no matter what the coach is saying, after 6-7 years, it has a tendency to get old. But I think the other part of it is just a common sense. Surely we can be better when we have this level of resource now, and good enough at least to compete like we should for these, you know, to make American Conference title games, if nothing else. It's kind of crazy, frankly, that Memphis didn't make it the last 6 years with the way they'd upped their resources, to be honest with you. It worked out great for Ryan Silverfield. He ends up getting, you know, a multi-million dollar deal with Arkansas. But for Memphis, who had Big 12 presidents basically tell it, not much has changed there since we last betted them. Didn't work out so well. Hopefully it will under Charles, you know, certainly more so under Charles Hook.
Jason, we appreciate it, baby.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the J&J Show. Cobb, Sankey has responded to the court ruling. Let's dive in to all of the meat that is on that bone, because that might give us an indication of where indeed this is headed. Talk about that and more when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company. Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
ESPN. All right, Cobb, this story comes to us from Pete Thamel and Dan Murphy of ESPN. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said allowing athletes who have signed professional contracts back into college sports, quote, fuels disruption and should not be allowed, according to an affidavit filed in a Louisiana courthouse last week. Sankey asked Judge Ronald Johnson in East Baton Rouge Parish in an East Baton Rouge Parish court to uphold NCAA rules that prevent athletes from returning, saying the decision is, quote, essential to the integrity of college sports, end quote. He wrote that allowing pros back into NCAA competition would undermine the fundamental principles of college sports and unfairly harm high school student athletes looking to join a college team, as well as other teams that have followed the existing rules. Quote, these rules are grounded in the principle that athletics are an integral part of the academic experience. The rules align the time permitted for college athletics with the pursuit of an undergraduate education and further the important purpose of preserving opportunities for future student athletes to participate in college sports. The affidavit was in response to a lawsuit filed by St. John's by former St. John's men's basketball player R.J. Lewis. He has since committed to LSU in hopes of playing one more season. The affidavit put Sankey on the opposing end of a legal argument supported by a school in his conference. Lewis's case is being adjudicated in the same courthouse as a similar lawsuit filed Wednesday that includes several football players who signed pro contracts this summer and are now aiming to return to college. The more recent case was filed by 32 total athletes who played a variety of sports, including three players who are currently on NFL rosters but wish to return to college. Three of the plaintiffs, Daquan Wright, Xavier Harris, and Wydette Williams, most recently played at Ole Miss under current LSU coach Lane Kiffin. So I think the first thing to note, right, is that Sankey is actually being consistent on this, because this is essentially the exact same logic that he used with Charles Bediako.
Yeah, so this is actually the interesting part, is this is mainly a basketball case in which he's filed this. It's the R.J. Lewis case at LSU where, I mean, this one's just totally ridiculous. I mean, R.J. Lewis declared for the NBA draft, played in the G League. Now he's trying to come back to college and play at LSU. So it's just coincidental that it's in the same parish in Louisiana as this football case. But, I mean, there you go. Like, I mean, good for Greg Sankey, I guess, right? Like, actually trying to do something that would hinder the aspirations of his own institutions for the sake of the betterment of college athletics, right? Like, I mean, that may sound a little bit virtuistic for somebody like Greg Sankey, who's can be pretty cutthroat, but like, there's no other way to really read it. Like, this would help LSU in basketball if this guy could get eligible, and he's putting his foot down to say this is outside the purview of what should happen in college sports. So like, I think you gotta give him some flowers for taking that stance. But I do wonder to what extent it's because he's being pressured by the other schools in the league. Because the other schools in the league, they don't want to have to play against R.J. Lewis, who turned pro and is now coming back to college, right? So, like, that's the interesting dynamic, is, like, how much of that is just pressure that he's getting from within.
Well, I do also wonder this, though. Could LSU have support based on the other players getting TROs? And thus, maybe they don't support the R.J. Lewis of it, but they support getting one of these other guys. You know what I mean?
I don't know how you could support one and not support the other.
Yeah.
I'd
be curious in this, and you're a better person to ask. What type of traffic do y'all see on the court rulings stories?
I think there's a lot of fatigue. I think people want to know answers on how it's actually going to impact on the field.
Well, I think you and I were ahead of this. I think the masses have gotten to the same point that we were, and I'm not saying, oh, you and I are trailblazers. It's that you and I have been inundated in this world for so long that we reached the conclusion, wake me up when y'all figure it out.
I think that's where most fans land. It's like, all right, I'll turn on the game in week one, and whoever's out there playing, great. You know, the casual fan, like, you know, you don't care if you get a late commitment from a guy who's a fifth-year player, or a guy who's been in an NFL minicamp, or a guy who played in the G League. If you can help my team win, great. And then you probably don't follow the other team's recruiting close enough to be outraged by the fact that they're doing it too.
No, so I think you bring up an interesting point, because I've thought about this as well. I wonder if one of the unintended consequences of this universe that we're in, if it's made fans even more tribalistic or provincial, where it's hard enough to even keep up with your team. And I get the sense even a lot of diehard fans don't even know who's on the team. But I think 100% what it's done is you're certainly not keeping up with everybody else's roster.
No, and unfortunately, like, it's devolved into such a muddy mess that I think college sports is losing out on the ability to really capitalize on a period of time that could be beneficial. Like, okay, for example, what I'm talking about is for 3 or 4 years there, I was the portal ranker at CBS for college basketball. And you get done with the Final Four. There's still a little bit of interest because, you know, the season just ended.
Yeah, you're jonesing for some more.
You're doing a little bit of a look ahead thing. You hadn't started thinking about college football just yet, maybe. And so these portal ranking stories would do crazy numbers it was kind of orderly compared to the way it is now, compared to the way it's been during this 5 for 5 mess. Like the portal from 21 to, let's say, 24 was kind of orderly. And so there was a lot of interest, a la the way there's interest in NBA free agency, a la the way there is interest in NFL free agency, MLB free agency. But now I think we've become oversaturated with these court cases to the extent that there's just fatigue. And what I'm worried about is everybody's like, oh, just get me to the games. Get me to the games, which I agree with. Well, week one is so bad this year that I think there's going to be a massive letdown when people really sit down and figure out the crap that the leaders in college sports are giving us in week one this year. After all the chaos we've been through, week one should be the, all right, we've made it. Let's celebrate and enjoy this. There's very little to enjoy in week one, and that is a travesty that we have the most garbage week one slate after the most chaotic offseason. I mean, what a fumbling of the bag, because everybody just wants the product. They want the games, right? And then you're going to get to week one, and you're going to get to halftime of all these games, and it's going to be garbage, and you're going to be like, so this is what I was waiting for?
No, I do think week one stinks. I'm not here to sell it. I do think, though, it's good to have it back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, week two's pretty solid. Like, week two, we have some bangers. And then you also combine, that's the opening of the NFL season. But this is what I also find interesting. Since nobody can figure out another major revenue path other than getting more money from TV, and the more and more we see schools try and fail to create new TV inventory, Cobb, the only way I see these contracts continuing to go up at the rate that they want them to go up, you're going to have to start, I'm talking 10-game schedules, 10-game conference schedules. And sorry to our FCS, I know we're keeping the lights on, but like, those games got to go away. The only way TV is going to get interested is if you start giving them more and better inventory. And they keep thinking it's the playoff, but where they're having the issue in expanding the playoff is you're not creating, it's the same issue that you and I talked about with the expansion of the NCAA tournament. They didn't create new inventory. And when you look at the actual amount of money that they're getting per school for the expansion of the tournament, there's a real question of whether or not it was worth it. It's like basically like $1 million per team that makes it. And okay. So you also, by the way, devalue the price of your product in future negotiations. So everyone's griping about having to play an extra SEC game and a P4 game. Man, the only solution I see to that is you're going to have to play even more conference games, and SoCon Saturday is going away.
It has to. I mean, to your point, like, yeah, you can expand the college football playoff, but in December, you're competing against the NFL head-to-head in a lot of these time slots. In week one of the college football season, you're not competing against the NFL. This is the time to capitalize. The MLB playoffs still don't start for another month, right? Basketball's out of sight, out of mind. There's nothing else going on. I mean, for crying out loud, ESPN has the Little League World Series on right now, and then sandwiching that with Pat McAfee yelling into a microphone. Like, there's nothing to watch on TV in the sports world right now. And college football starts in less than 3 weeks, less than 2 weeks if you count week zero, and it starts with a whimper. It starts with an absolute whimper. And it's just like, I don't work for a private equity firm, Jeffrey, but I can tell you what a private equity firm is going to say. It's like, well, there's your opportunity. Yeah, I mean, to your point, everybody's all fixated on playoff expansion, but The fact that you still have regular seasons in college in college football where a quarter of the schedule is basically meaningless fluff. For a lot of these teams, if you play a 9-game conference schedule, the other three are cupcakes, or you play an 8-game conference schedule with one power four and the other three games are cupcakes. So like 20 to 25% of college football's inventory is just utter garbage. And a lot of that falls on week one when you have the calendar to yourself. Like, what a colossal waste of the perfect chance to get eyeballs on your sport.
All right, I'm trying to think. So I'm doing it from memory. Week one is when we have LSU-Clemson. Sunday we have Notre Dame-Wisconsin at Lambeau. We have Ole Miss and Louisville in Nashville.
Yes. But think about it. Like, the noon...
I was trying to think. Okay, is there? It's not probably better. But I was like, is there an argument week zero is even better?
I mean, week zero by week zero standards is actually pretty good. But it's just a marginal. It's kind of like a niche product. It's not like the unofficial start of the season.
All right, on Saturday, East Carolina, Bama.
That's the one that's going to have to carry you in the noon window.
You don't have high hopes for Oregon State and Houston? They played a banger last year down to the wire.
I mean, like, ECU Alabama is the best game.
A 28.5 point spread.
I mean, I'll be interested to see what Keelan Russell looks like. You know, I mean, that's there is some intrigue in that from that standpoint. But
yeah, but I mean, are you really going to learn anything about Keelan Russell in that game? Like, I totally agree, like, seeing what he looks like, but what you think about Alabama will not be impacted.
Most likely not. I mean, that's the only reason you tune in is to see what he looks like, assuming he does win the job. Indiana playing North Texas would have been interesting if Eric Morris and Drew Mestermaker had stayed at North Texas. Not interesting now. That game will be 65-0.
I guess we have to say, even though it's a 24.5 point spread, like, Boise State, Oregon is still marginally interesting.
Shout out to CBS, but that game's not until the afternoon, right?
2:30.
Yeah. So, like, the noon window, which is coming out of college game day, coming out of the first real college game day, big noon. I mean,
what about the Frank Solich Bowl? Ohio at Nebraska.
Sadly, that's like the third most interesting game.
Oh, that's getting a screen. Let's be real.
Yeah. So this is just that. That's my fear.
Oh, Liberty JMU.
Well, if you're like a G6 sicko,
I'll say that's our hipster game of the week.
So it's just frustrating to me. Like, we come out of this offseason where it's just give me to the season. And then you get to the season and it's like, oh.
All right, 2:30. So we had Boise at Oregon, Baylor at Auburn in the big-bodied Benz.
We're getting better. You get better as the day goes on.
Boy, talking yourself into BC at Cincinnati's tough. The Darian Mensa leftist bowl, the first
lovers.
What are we calling this? The first wives club game of the week. Tulane and Duke. That's also 2:30. That's ACC Network. Oklahoma State Tulsa. I think Oklahoma State. I don't know if they're bad enough to lose that one. Then later. Clemson LSU.
I mean, that's the prize of Saturday.
Because even like,
I mean,
FA, like, I'm trying to set the tasting menu early here.
Yeah, and it's tough. It really is. Like, you're gonna struggle to get to four screens worth having on.
Also at 6, that's the Arkansas State Memphis game. That number's down to 9.5.
The Fighting Butch Joneses.
He's got like a guy that Texas probably signed as the depth piece at quarterback, but had a decent high school resume at quarterback. I always feel like Arkansas State
It's like if they nail the transfer quarterback, they're usually pretty frisky. And that is just such a fascinating game because, I mean, this week zero game for Memphis, like it is impossible to predict because I think it's 71 new players. I've also heard whispers. I'm using it more in the things I've heard, not things I believe. Jackson Arnold might not be winning the UNLV quarterback battle.
Oh, wow. Who's the other guy?
Alex Orji.
Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, I can see that.
Now, you always have to leave room for Dan Mullen just kind of messing with people. Could South Dakota State beat Northwestern?
Probably. Yeah. Probably a pretty good game there.
We still won't be opening the new stadium there. UNLV goes to Hawaii at 9.
Yeah, you get into the late night slate on week one.
UCLA,
and by late night slate standards, it's pretty good. Like Hawaii's frisky. UNLV's at their place. WKU always pretty good out of CUSA. UCLA, Cal, right? Like that. Thank goodness they're playing.
I mean,
right?
The reality is, are the most interesting games Sunday and Monday?
Yes, I think the Sunday slate, which has three games, is as interesting as anything we have Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
And then that FSU-SMU game is so fascinating because FSU feels like one of the most fragile teams out there. It's like, if they get off to a good start, you can see the world where, hey, they keep it together. But it's like, lose that game right off the bat, and it's like that fan base will turn immediately.
Yeah, but as we saw last year, even if you win the big one early at FSU, it doesn't necessarily portend a great season. But I love that game. Like,
it does not have to be a great season. It's just got to not be a disaster for him.
Oh, I agree. And that's why, like, week one should be all about is like, oh man, my cheeks are clenched right out of the gate. Like, this game matters. This is uncomfortable for both teams. And like, there's like two teams playing in week one who have any legitimate aspirations who are like going to be in somewhat uncomfortable positions. Like, it's just pathetic. Like, it is pathetic. Like, that we've gotten to a place where, you know, like, it felt like for most of the 2020s, like for the entire time I was at CBS, I've been at CBS, which is now 6.5 years. Like, week one has been pretty good. Pretty good.
We started, I want to say 24 was bad. Last year was like a shockingly good week one. It had been trending in the wrong direction, and then we kind of got it back on the rails. But I don't know if I would say it has been, like, I wouldn't argue that this is that far out of the norm.
Yeah, I think I would. I think this is the worst I can ever remember.
All right, I wanted to look up, because last year we had like a good full balance. Because we had FSU Bama early on Saturday. We had LSU Clemson late. Wasn't that late window kind of stacked?
Yeah, you need something in every window, and you don't really have that in week one.
All right, let's see. Was week one super early last week? Like, all right. So I can't remember if this was Thursday or Friday, but that was Boise State USF. All right, let's get to where was the actual Saturday games. So we had Tennessee Syracuse. That was like 11, right? That was 11 a.m.
Yeah. P4 versus P4. Like, that's, Syracuse was coming off of a 9-win season. Tennessee, you know, a ranked team. So that's like a good game that you need to have to anchor your early slate on week one. We don't have that, you know, this year. Then you got into the afternoon last year, and Florida State, Alabama, that was an afternoon game, right? So like, you had an anchor there in the afternoon. Like,
God, I gotta say, man, looking back, I don't know, man.
You had something in every window though. Like, and that's just not the case this year. And then you got into the nighttime window last year. You had LSU Clemson, which, you know, ended up being a pretty close game. It wasn't necessarily loaded, but you at least had something everywhere along the way. Utah, UCLA at the end, which that ended up being the highlight of the night last year in week one because we realized, oh my gosh.
Well, and then also we had the JKS debut. I don't know, man. I think you got graduation goggles with this window.
Well, I'll also say this. The Friday slate was better last year because you had Auburn and Baylor on Friday a year ago.
Yep.
Thursday slate, you had
we had Boise, had USF. And then, that was Nebraska, Cincinnati.
Right. So there was something in every single window of the weekend, including Monday and Monday as well. And, like, that's just not the case this year.
I definitely agree that it's stinky. I do think, though, we will do the move of, with week two being pretty good, I think we'll do the move of, it's good to have it back. And I mean, like, that's kind of the other thing is, somewhat of it is defined by, if Alabama just went to Tallahassee and won by 10, how do we remember that?
That's true. I mean, there being a shocking result in a game between two marquee brands, like, yeah,
and,
that changes.
And
the
it
way
was
you think
in that perfect 2:30, like, everybody get to the TV.
Yeah, but I guess this year, you know, what is that? Boise State, Oregon? Do I have any faith whatsoever?
All right, I was trying to think of, like, realistic ones. I kind of think I would short Boise. I think I've started to do the I'm so sick of hearing from my West Coast friends about East Coast bias. Maybe there's I think there's West Coast, we let you say anything. Like, we do not nitpick those teams. Like, Washington is getting a ton of buzz. Why? They did not. I think they beat one team that finished with a winning record last year. Like, yeah, they beat up on a bunch of bad teams. Like, but, like, same thing. It's like Boise, Oregon's. Like, we don't use any critical eyes on those teams. I'm trying to think of the ones where I'd say, all right, this is doable.
Well, it's unfortunately a lot of FCS. Like, and those are great. Like, when those upsets happen, when you get the FCS team that's in it late into the fourth quarter, that's actually a great experience. It is a very fun watch.
I will say this. It won't be as fun, but, I mean, if Clemson goes into Baton Rouge and wins the football game, we got something to talk about.
No doubt. I would also put Penn State, like, on upset watch. Like, first game under Matt Campbell, playing against Marshall. Don't know how really, like, you know, how legit Marshall is, but historically anyway, a program that you need to be on upset alert for.
Yeah, I was trying to find any of the other ones. Like, Ohio against Nebraska would be hilarious. There's a lot of games that, like, if you were to lose this game, it's more alarming than it is like, oh, like flipping of the script.
Yeah, I remember a few years back, Tennessee getting pushed to the brink. No, they lost, didn't they, to Georgia State?
That was the end of Pruitt, though, wasn't it?
It was.
And but, like, I want to say that was like week two, right, wasn't it?
But if you get a result like that.
Yeah, no, like, it's like, oh my God. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's get into a couple other headlines. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, a little bit of an update on the players that got the TRO. This is just such an unbelievable headline from On3. Cleveland Browns tight end Daquan Wright has entered the NCAA transfer portal, Pete Nakos reports.
I mean, what a world. Take us back 8 years, and we'd be like, huh?
What's the transfer portal? Well, but, like, hold on. Wait. The Cleveland Browns, did they get relegated? Like, I think that would be the argument. Like, wait, what? He's on the roster, right? Yeah. He's entering the college transfer portal? Yeah.
So that fits with your theory, though, that he's going to try to end up at LSU.
I'm telling you, I know it's fun on the internet streets to just to rip on Ole Miss. I do not actually think that Ole Miss was spearheading this.
I mean, Xavier Harris going into the portal.
I mean, I guess you could talk me into Wynette Williams goes to Ole Miss, but like, I don't know. I don't really think that that was the impetus. All right. Over at CBS Sports, David's colleague, Brad Crawford, he's got his CFP and bowl projections. And you tell me what the universe would look like if this were true, because honestly, nothing he put on here is like, oh my God. I wouldn't sit there and go, this is engagement farming. His number one team, 13-0 Miami. I think that is very much in the realm of possibility when you consider what the ACC is now. Agreed?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're head and shoulders above the league.
Now, we always have to leave room for, you know, a traditional Miami, what the hell are they doing?
Absolutely. I don't think they'll be 13-0, but I do think they'll be in the playoff.
All right. Number two, champion of the Big Ten, Oregon at 12-1. I will say, maybe it is in our space, it feels like one of the most commonly made predictions is Oregon winning the Big Ten.
Well, I think it's got to do with Ohio State having a more difficult schedule, Penn State rebooting, Michigan having a lot of uncertainty.
And a tough schedule, too. Michigan's got a tough schedule as well.
And quite frankly, the continued disbelief in Indiana, which does have a slightly more difficult schedule than it has at any point so far under Kurt Cignetti, but just people can't believe it. Like, people refuse to predict that they'll be as good as they were last year, even though a lot of the reality with their roster suggests they should be every bit as good as they were last year.
Number three, Georgia, the SEC champion at 12-1. The number four seed, Notre Dame at 11-1. The number five seed, Texas at 11-2. The number six seed, Big 12 champion, Texas Tech at 12-1. Number seven, Indiana at 10-2. Number eight, 10-3, Ohio State. So I guess in that scenario, he would have Ohio State getting to the championship game and then losing, correct?
Yeah, that must be it.
Number nine, LSU at 10-2. Number 10, a second Big 12 team, BYU at 11-2. At number 11, a second ACC team, 11-2 SMU. And his number 12 seed, the G6 representative, 12-1 UNLV. I can just say
this is an absolute disaster for the SEC.
I was going to say, I would argue this is a disaster for you and me. The conversation, if this, and by the way, nothing that he put out there is like, oh my God. Because essentially what he would have is every SEC coach's worst nightmare. Because he also includes bowl projections. And I think he has Ole Miss in the Citrus Bowl. He had Alabama in the artist formerly known as the Outback Bowl. A&M dropping down to the Music City Bowl. Oklahoma in the Gator Bowl. So essentially it's like, hey, that log jam of all those similar teams just kind of beating up on each other. Tennessee to the Texas Bowl. I mean, it's in the realm of possibility. I will say this. So
when you get two ACC teams in, two Big 12 teams in, and Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, that leaves seven. And a G6. I mean, that leaves six spots. And, you know,
I don't think anything that he projected is unfair. I do think I would be surprised. I would be surprised if you can talk me into the Big 12 and the ACC combining for three. I do think I'd be surprised if they combined for four.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, typically, I think in most years under a 12-team format, the Big 12 and the ACC would combine for three teams. So only one of those leagues is going to get two teams in. But I think this makes the case for why the SEC should be I get it. ESPN's not in favor of it, but like at some point you gotta stand up for yourself and say, look, sorry guys, we understand you're our TV partner, but we're trying to get our maximum number of our teams into the playoffs. We're trying to comprise a larger percentage of the playoff to give ourselves a better chance to win a national championship. And by expanding the playoff to whatever number you want to expand it to, it's only going to help the SEC because look, In the AP preseason poll, you have Texas A&M at 8, Ole Miss at 9, Oklahoma at 10, Alabama at 13. That's four teams very much in the playoff picture going into the season who aren't in this playoff projection. Why? Because they're probably going to lose three games because you're playing a 9-game SEC schedule. Nobody's really dominant enough in this league anymore to just walk through that, cakewalk through that. So you end up with a bunch of teams in the 13 through 20 range, right?
Well,
so
it's the first year of the 12-team playoff all over again. Remember, it was like Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina. I think we're all 9-3.
Well, yeah, and then even a year ago, like Texas had a case at 9-3. Vanderbilt got left out at 10-2.
Yeah, but they did get five teams in.
Sure, but if you expand it to 16, they get seven. Like, I mean, so the more you expand the playoff, the more SEC teams are going to get in. And that's where the strength of schedule factor starts to help you, because when you're deciphering between 9-3 and 8-4 type of teams, well, then the strength of schedule can really factor in. But you're handicapped. You're locked in with the way it's built now, because Notre Dame's going to be in if they're top 12. You got to have somebody from the ACC. You got to have somebody from the Big 12. Got to have somebody from the G6. You know the top of the Big 10 because the bottom of the league stinks. The top three or four teams from the Big 10 are going to have unbelievable records. And then you've now gone to a cannibalistic 9-game slate, which ensures that a bunch of your teams are going to have three losses. And there's just not room for three lost teams under this current format. So, like, they are shooting themselves in the foot by doing ESPN's bidding and trying to keep this thing, you know. I mean, the larger the playoff gets, the better it is for the SEC. I'm not saying that, like, I want it to expand.
No.
I'm saying if I'm Greg Sankey, I do want it to expand.
I think if I'm Greg Sankey, I'm trying to keep ESPN happy.
True. I mean, I get it, right? But
I also think the 12-team rocks. Here, God, can you imagine this? All right, let's get the pre-mad going. So I'm looking at his SMU, which he has as 11-2. So my interpretation of that is SMU makes the ACC championship game, loses to Miami. I think what he would have is SMU's 11-1 regular season, with the one loss being at Notre Dame and then losing in the conference championship game to Miami. Their best win would be at Louisville.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be the talking point. It's like, who did you actually beat?
Boy, that's going to be some good discourse online.
No, it absolutely is. I'm going to pitch it. I don't know if it's going to happen or whatever, but like, I want to do a weekly resume ranking kind of based off the way they do wins above bubble in college basketball. I mean, we've got to have a mechanism in college football to decipher and put a value on a win and to put a value on a loss, right? Like, there's got to be a way to do that. We can't just get into a world where, oh, well, they lost to good teams. Okay, great. Cool. I don't care who you lost to. Who did you actually beat? At what point during the season did you prove that your quality as a team? Right? And SMU, unless they beat Notre Dame.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know the exact mechanics. Isn't that what FPI attempts to do?
No, I mean, FPI, I would call it more of like a
power rating.
More like a power ranking. They do have their strength of record, their SOR. But the thing about the SOR is we don't really know about it. Like, it's a proprietary metric from ESPN, and you don't really have any transparency, I guess, in exactly how that's formulated. And so, like, you also have the inherent distrust from the public in those ESPN metrics, because there's now this sense that, oh, ESPN is juicing these metrics. I don't think they are, but like, this idea is out there.
Indiana, Oregon, Miami had the best strength of records. And Ohio State.
Yeah.
That
kind of flies in the face of them being biased towards the SEC.
Correct. You know? 1, 2, 3, 4.
But, right. So like, I would do it where I would use other.
But I do agree with you. I never loved Net. I thought it was an improvement on RPI, no duh. I still didn't love it. You've talked me into WOB, wins above bubble, because I liked your metaphor of Miami of Ohio's just cashing in on penny stocks. And then you have some other teams that are like, you know, they got $5 wins. Whereas you know, Miami of Ohio is picking up a lot of quarters. And
yeah, I mean, Auburn, anytime they got a win in the SEC on the road, they made 75 cents out of it.
Correct.
Whereas Miami of Ohio was just stacking up pennies. And, you know, when Auburn would lose, they wouldn't really even get hit that hard.
And show me your portfolio at the end of it.
Yeah, and so, like, I think the evaluating the record has been so pounded into our brains over the course of college football history. And it's in a world now where these schedules are so imbalanced where, like, the record just doesn't mean – like what it used to mean, even amongst two teams within the same league, there can be such a vastly different schedule that they've played.
It is where, though, I think the SEC add the ninth game is going to help.
I think it absolutely does. I just wonder, I think it would help a lot more if the playoff was 24 teams.
Well, where I think it also hurts them is they've not had a lot of teams lift and separate. Like, to a certain degree, like, I was actually thinking about this the other day. I think I've maybe come around on Georgia somehow being underrated. So, since 2021, thanks to Cobb's True Media Access, I believe the number is Georgia has 66 wins. That's seven more than the next closest. They have largely been defined by two 12-team playoff exits, one of which was with a backup quarterback, and the other of which Trinidad Chambliss had one of the best halves of football I've ever seen a guy have in a big stage.
Well, and they might win the title the year before.
Correct.
And, you know, when it's they're the first team out. I can't see a world. Georgia, to me, has the highest floor of any team in the SEC. But, no, I mean, the last thing I would say on the strength of schedule piece is basically just like, the playoff told us a year ago that they were starting to account for it, but they've not shown us how. On the basketball side, they show you how. There's transparency with the wins above bubble. Anybody can crack that code and that formula. It's not a secret. People are still sort of learning about it and finding out about it, but it's actually pretty easy to understand, and you can understand, oh, this win earns us this much credit. This loss got us hurt this much. There's nothing like that in college football other than the college football playoff selection committee telling us that they have a metric called win quality or whatever, but they haven't showed us how it worked. They don't list it on their official rankings. Nobody in that room has demonstrated any command for what that actually means. And that's why I think the SEC may have jumped the gun just a little bit on going to nine games, because if they're just taking the CFP committee's word for it, okay. Like, but show us where that actually factors in.
Yeah, I guess the other argument would be the final rankings from the CFP look better. Like, I wonder how much they just screwed themselves by arbitrarily dropping Miami because Miami had two bad losses. Like, the fact that there's so much difference between Miami and Notre Dame, despite the fact that they had the same number in the loss column, they had to, like, get back. But, like, when you look at the final rankings, you know, Indiana and Ohio State were rewarded. Like, it kind of makes sense. It's just the path we took to get there was so circuitous and kind of so dumb TV show logic. Like, that's kind of what made it the issue.
There's a lot of that's part of the reason why, like I'm saying, the SEC should want expansion. I'm okay with keeping it at 12 until we get 12 figured out. Let's get this right.
I think this year's going to be a very good I think we've actually made it better every year.
Yeah, and we need to keep making it better and kind of get it down before
we
start trying to expand
it. I like tweaking this more than I do expansion, because I like the fact that it feels like making the playoff is an achievement. And if you didn't make it, tough.
Yeah, like if you're Texas, maybe you feel like you have a case, but at the same time, don't lose to Florida.
Correct.
You know?
Don't lose to Florida, and don't go to overtime against Mississippi State and Kentucky. All right, buddy, I appreciate you hanging out with us on paternity leave.
Yeah, man, thanks.
That's David Cobb of CBS Sports. When we come back, let us tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM. Yeah.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out. Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Michael, don't call me Mike Malone. I guess he had media day today. George, everyone asks me if I golf. I don't golf. I work. I will say, maybe we need to monitor. Are NBA coaches more, like Taylor Jenkins used to, I always feel like Taylor was always a football coach that was packaged in a basketball coach.
Yeah.
That's a football coach.
Oh, that's like, such, you know, a football
associating,
coach.
Associating work with success, like the amount of work that you put in. Like, don't you have a daughter that plays volleyball? I guess you don't.
Do you play volleyball?
Do you watch any of that? Like,
how dare you? Literally, that's not work.
Is it just work? That's it? You have no life? My thanks to David Cobb, Jason Smith for being with us. If you missed anything, I'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.